Between client meetings, managing your business, and everyday tasks, who has time to worry about website hosting? With Kinsta's Managed WordPress hosting, you don't have to. They handle the technical stuff, delivering lightning-fast load times, enterprise-grade security, and 24/7, 365 human-only support. Simply switching to Kinsta can make your site up to 200% faster. Kinsta's custom dashboard makes managing sites easy, with powerful features designed to save you time and effort. Plus, their free expert-led migrations ensure a smooth transition. Ready to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses? Get your first month free at kinsta.com. That's KINSTA.com. Kinsta, simply better hosting.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and we're back for the next to last episode. Already the next to last episode of the Expectations series here. Today we're going to talk about Mark Andrews and Bilal Kone, two players who may have a spot on the Ravens this year. Andrews certainly will. Joining me to do that, talk about these players, is Jeremy Kahn of 105.7. Jeremy, how you doing?
I'm good, Ken. Thanks for having me. I love sitting here talking. I don't know if somebody reached out to you, but on the podcast I've been doing, I was talking about you coming on the show and going over the gambling stuff, as we always talk. And somebody reached out to me and said, hey, I want to get that guy on my podcast. How do I do that? So I don't know if somebody reached out to you or not, but it's kind of cool. But I do. I love talking to you, man.
Well, you let me know if you want to talk gambling and the new tax law, because that is a clusterfuck if ever there was one.
Oh, God. Something else, man.
All right. Well, we always start with the undercard on these. And I'm sorry, Mark Andrews. No, I'm just kidding. Bilal Kone is the undercard here today. Pick out of Western Michigan in the sixth round at number 178. He's kind of that typical outside corner size the Ravens like at 6'1", 190. Arms are maybe a tiny bit on the short side for somebody that size at 30 7/8, but runs a 4.43. He played 2 years at JUCO ball, 1 year at Indiana State, and then 2 years at Western Michigan. So he's either 23 or 24. I don't know his exact age. He's one of the players, and there's always a few of these in the draft that the agent perhaps has done a good job of scrubbing the entire internet to make sure the age is not there.
Yeah, they do a really good job of kind of getting rid of some stuff, leaking out information that they feel needs to be leaked out. But yeah, this is another one of those. I mean, is it fair to call Bilal a project because of where he's drafted? You have to like his size, but there's also some things in his game that I think you're going to look at and go, oh, he's got to improve on that, clearly.
Yeah, he's maybe in the form, the closest player I can think of in recent years, maybe JAD would fall in that category, as a bigger corner, fast. The other things are in question, and we're going to talk about some of those things in terms of what happened. He had a very weird testing profile too, an outstanding three cone, which is, by the way, unusual for an outside corner. You get that a lot of the slot, and you sometimes get it at edge rusher to tremendous variation in degree at edge rusher. But it's kind of rare to have a good short area quickness guy at outside corner. All right. So I always look at the coverage metrics in college. Now, I don't use coverage metrics as the only form of scouting by any stretch, but I will say you ignore them at your own peril. Okay. And if a guy has really poor coverage metrics and he otherwise seems like a reasonable draft pick, He might not be. And one of the reasons Kone slipped so far, there are a couple of reasons. Age, not a whole lot of playing time, no Power Five, you know, Indiana State and Western Michigan were his Division I teams. I always say that still, but I'm an old timer, obviously, but he had allowed 8.1 yards per target in 2024, which is in the 26th percentile, and 7.9 in his FBS career. So that's in the 3 years that he was at the higher level, obviously. Opposition passer rating is good, 79.3. That's in the 56th percentile, but it's 92.4 career. So you got a guy who did not put it together in terms of coverage results. Obviously, multiple schools, multiple schemes. All right, let's move on a little bit. Two interceptions, 19 pass breakups, and 861 FBS coverage snaps. Decent aggregate ball production, certainly. But not a good conversion rate. And you know, this is one of the things the Ravens had a lot of trouble with last year, in particular Nate Wiggins, but a lot of other players as well, holding on to the football.
Yeah, sorry, I think I cut out for a second there. But so I hope I got everything and didn't miss a point where you're asking me to talk. But in some of the research I've done on Blau, it's like you like the size. There's a lot of things that you can like about his game. The one thing I didn't like reading and even watching in some of the highlights is, once he's beat, he's not really good at recovering all that well. And, I mean, look, you're going to get beat playing in this league. All the advantages are on offense. It's going to happen. It's how short is that memory and can you recover to make sure it's not huge plays? You know, I think in Bilal's case, you know, when you're looking at this season, the secondary stacked. You know, he'll get an opportunity, I think, if there's an injury or – maybe if he plays out of his mind in preseason. I just don't – there's nothing to lead me to believe that that's going to happen.
You know, you make an important point, though, about camp and preseason is he's got to stay healthy now because a lot of his total playing time is going to happen between those two periods. He's going to get time this July and August, and he's going to get time in the preseason to play some actual live fire snaps, but that has to hold him through basically to 2026. He may be on the practice squad this year. I think that's actually fairly likely. The Ravens could keep one of Longer Beam or him on the roster, I believe, but I think the arrows point to me for Longer Beam to be the guy because I think he's the natural slot corner, and the Ravens don't really have the depth there, whereas they have a ton of depth at that outside position.
Yeah, and another part of this too is like, I love how you brought it up with you got to stay healthy, which it's unfair to these guys because you never know when you're going to get hurt. But we talk about getting Wally pipped all the time in baseball, and we've seen that happen. It can definitely happen in football as well. But this is your chance to really showcase yourself and get some eyes on you. The other thing with this, Ken, that I find really interesting is, you know, as you're looking at preseason and even camp and trying to showcase yourself, like, this is a loaded roster, isn't it? Like, correct me if I'm wrong or if you feel differently. There's not a lot of great battle spots for starters. There's a couple. And then when you start talking about depth, I think that's where you start looking at it. So, yeah, getting eyes on you and getting some stuff on tape against other NFL players, borderline NFL players, I think is really going to help you out in the long run. It's really hard to judge a guy like this because, as you said, we saw him at two different schools, but neither one of them were major universities or Power Five, which you like to see. Doesn't mean he can't play, but it's just another thing that I think you're not seeing him against that top level competition. So maybe you question it.
Right. It is. I've got to bring up one like mitigating factor to his kind of poor coverage statistics in college. If you look at his splits between left corner and right corner at Western Michigan in the 2 years there in particular, he has a lot of split by game. So he'll play 30 at left corner and 35 at right corner kind of thing in the same ball game. So what that indicates to me is he's probably trailing the best receiver on the opposing team. And if that happens, then it's more natural why he would allow a few more yards per target than he otherwise might. So I look for that. That's definitely something. The guys who play right corner all the time, like Brandon Stevens has for the last couple of years for the Ravens, they've got a different set of challenges that the other team can always be working against you, but it's a more challenging situation when you're always on the number one.
Oh, there's no question. And again, like sometimes covering the number one, depending on how good you are, you'll have some help over the top. There's within our division, there's some serious number ones. So I would sit here and say, and I'm not even dismissing Jerry Jeudy with the Browns because I think that guy is phenomenal as well. But, I mean, Jamar Chase is one of one. And if you – watching Wiggins last year on him quite a bit, which I found interesting that they were willing to do that, you know, if you can guard the number one on the opposing team without any help, even at that level, I still think it's something to take a look at. And there's – look, I think you and I will be in the same boat of saying, I trust this Ravens front office. I trust this scouting team. They're not going to hit home runs on every one, but this is another spot where maybe he becomes a depth piece. Maybe we see enough in preseason to really say that this guy can be a part of this team. But I also believe because your team is as stacked as it is, that the Ravens with some of their later round draft picks, I wouldn't be shocked to see a couple guys get cut over the next few years. Yeah.
Yeah, I would expect that. And I don't think there's room for everybody this year. They have a couple of veteran players. And by the way, we just did this. And if you want to go back and listen to Friday's podcast, Friday Morning GM, we went through the depth chart and who was, you know, who's really at risk to being cut. But there are two primary players, fourth year guys. One of them's JAD. And I think that there's a good chance that either Kone or Longer B makes the roster over JAD because of the amount of sand left in the hourglass. The JAD, they only own his future for this year. With these two guys, they own it for 4 years. So it makes more sense for one of those guys to make the team. The other guy's David Ajabo. And he's in the last year of his contract. For him to make the team, Adisa Isaac basically has to be cut. Or they have to do something they haven't done, which is to keep a sixth edge player. And there have been some roster, what I would call it, depth charts created where they show the Ravens as having kept six. What they're doing is in that they're including a Malik Harrison from last year as a six when he's really a hybrid player. And I don't really, you know, believe that was really the case.
Yeah. And there's something else too, like looking at guys that are later round draft picks, and you don't even have to be that late. There's a good chance you're going to be asked to play special teams. I don't know his background in that because, and I'm not saying you have to be able to play special teams, but it does make you more valuable when you're looking at that roster spot.
Yeah, you have to be able to play special teams. I don't have any. If you're a fast player in the NFL, you absolutely must be able to do it as your second calling of duty. You get out of that responsibility when you become the number one or two player at the position. A guy who has taken a much lower special teams responsibility this last season is Justice Hill. You know, he's too important as a running back now.
He had some good tackles, man.
Yeah, he was a good special teams player, that's for sure. But anyway, and another guy who's absolutely made space for himself on the active game day roster, even though they didn't get him the football much this last year, is Tez Walker. He wasn't playing. He wasn't even active in the early weeks of the season. Then he was active for 11 weeks. I think it was like 11 of the last 12 or 13 where he was around because of his special teams thing. Guy has cost himself activations the same way. David Ajabo has no real special teams value. So it's a luxury to be able to keep him on the game day roster. So he had a couple healthy scratches.
I know we weren't talking about Tez here, but like, since you brought him up, he's a guy that I thought was going to get his chance to take the step forward this year. But when they signed Hopkins, I think that kind of puts it on the back burner. There were a lot of so-called draft nicks that I talked to that thought if he had stayed in college that he could have been a first-round pick this year. And, I mean, there's some serious talent there. It's just, can you harness that? And will he get that opportunity to be that guy?
He has one very serious flaw as a player. And this was evident in his last year at North Carolina. I still thought he was the number 12. I had him as a number 12 receiver on my board, but the biggest flaw about Walker is the non-existence of complementary routes that'll magnify the effectiveness of his deep routes. So you need to have a comeback or a hitch or a dig. You know, you need to do something else while coming back to the quarterback to otherwise magnify what you can do at the top of the stem to get deep. And he'd gotten by, frankly, I think a lot on speed at North Carolina, and you know, you want him to have that. But I think what I've seen more from him this OTAs is that he's really working on coming back to the quarterback effectively for the ball, using his body a little bit better to box out. Got a very big body. Hopefully continues with the special teams play. And if he wants to get on the field one other way, Tylan Wallace is getting a lot of snaps as a pure run blocker right now. And Tez has the body to do it. So if he wants to be a good run blocker, he's a big dude.
Well, you know, and you brought up a couple of things that I thought were interesting there is like for me, and I love wide receivers, and it's the position I watch most. You know, like I'm a Justin Jefferson truther. I think the guy's amazing. And there was actually a viral video going around of him teaching kids the correct way to catch a deep ball and when to put your hands up, where your hand should be. But I give me a route runner 10 out of 10 times over a guy that's fast. Because if you get down the routes and you can make things look precise, I attribute it to like a starting pitcher pitching out of the same slot. If you're throwing a curveball and a fastball out of the same slot, or maybe that's a bad way to do it, then it gets really difficult for the hitter to pick up on what's coming. It's going to break another way. Same thing with a route runner. If you're able to make the route look the same each time, it's going to behoove you for double moves. And in a guy like Tez, because he's so fast and taking the top off the defense, as you pointed out, you get a hitch or a dig in there, and you'll end up seeing one of those routes because they respect the speed so much where the guy actually runs off of the screen when the guy's coming back on the dig. So I didn't mean to get off on a tangent on him, but I do think that's another interesting piece for the future.
Yeah. Yeah. It's I do too. And Ravens fans probably as a group should hope that Tez Walker eats DeAndre Hopkins lunch. DeAndre Hopkins is a 1-year commitment. I mean, Tez Walker's here for the next three. If Tez Walker were to beat out DeAndre Hopkins because he's the better player, that would be a good thing.
Absolutely. Yeah. There's no question. I think fans would look at it differently, but this would say that you got a guy under contract that really can do this. And you got him on the cheap as well.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Let's get back to Kone for a minute. Cause we got a field a little bit, a few things about his game that I wanted to talk about from last season. He did have a 13.9% missed tackle rate. That's adequate. It's not exceptional at corner. I would expect that probably to be not as good at the NFL level, since he's kind of taking 1.5 jumps from a Western Michigan rather than coming from the Power Five to the NFL, which would be one jump. He did get really taken to the woodshed by Akron in the first game, 7 of 7 on his targets for 162, allowed a 79-yard play in that game. You know, you mentioned the recovery speed. One thing that's really apparent from watching that game was there's a lack of transitional speed that puts him in some bad spots. And also I think, and this is true of a lot of cornerbacks who don't really have that good transitional speed, they'll open up a little earlier than they should. You talked about, you know, what happens in terms of if you're a good salesman or a wide receiver at the top of the stem, you can go deeper, you can come back. But if you can get that defensive back to open up, it makes your job that much easier in terms of the amount of separation you can get.
Yeah, there was something you said, you brought up Akron, and Akron was a fun team to watch last year. The offense was really good. You know, that's a team, just being a gambler, I know how much I was betting overs on Akron games, but it was a fun offense to watch. I'm not saying that gives Bilal any type of pass or anything, but in talking about the difference in, you know, being able to track the football when it's in the air and find your guy, as opposed to your beat and you know your beat, getting your head down, it seems like he has good speed for that position, not great. Is that fair?
His speed's above average at 4.43.
So 4.4, right? Like you got guys in this league that are running sub 4.4 now, quarterbacks and wide receivers. I mean, a ton of them. Hell, we might get one out of prison here in Henry Ruggs soon enough.
It's a long tail, basically. And what I'd say is you're always dealing with the right-hand side of the curve in terms of speed at corner in the NFL. They're faster than receivers, generally speaking. It goes to your point earlier, route running is really more important. But the guys on the right end of the curve, it's a long tail, and you get down to the Wigginses and even some guys who are a little bit faster than that in the 4.2s. But where it really, the difference making really starts to occur at corner for me is between 4.5 and 4.6. Those guys, that drop off, every 0.01 matters, and everyone is significant. That's why TJ Tampa is a guy who dropped a lot of the draft because of 4.59, 4.40. He may be able to play, he may not. He may have to move to safety because of it, but definitely a guy who his draft stock hurt from it.
Yeah, there's no question. You look at the speed kills. I mean, again, not to get off on a tangent on something else, I had a kid that we invited in our family, and he wanted to get in the NFL, and he was undersized, and he ran like you said, a 4.5, 4.6. And being 170 pounds, when he's playing against other, you know, lower level college kids, he looks like a superstar. He couldn't even get a look from anybody. Yeah. Agents wouldn't even pick him up because they're like, your size with that speed, it's not worth my time. And it's kind of weird, like, you know, looking at some of those things when we think about it, we're like, oh, that guy's really good. Why didn't they pick him up? Well, they don't believe he can fit. And with TJ Tampa, he's a guy that I had high hopes for. I liked him in college.
Yeah. Yeah, he's I still have high hopes for him, by the way. And the Ravens have a hole at safety. And in a lot of ways, moving Tampa there would potentially solve that. If he could be a half field guy, he's got all the speed you need for that. Because it doesn't require that much. It really requires instincts more to play the back end than the half field role. But he's been very up and down as a corner this set of OTAs so far. So that change may be coming. There's a safety missing somewhere that the Ravens have to figure out how to get. So it either has to be someone else. And I'm talking even in addition to Sanusi Kane, who may or may not succeed at the position. They need one more guy. They may have to get him from a cornerback who gets converted. They may have to go to the street to get him, but they'll have to figure out exactly how they're going to.
You didn't mean they'd be holding up a sign that said looking for safety on the corner when you said go to the street, right?
Yeah, that's about right. Guys
there's some guys that'll probably be released, some vets at some point, and maybe they'll kick the tires on it. But I think it would be interesting if they did kind of fill that in-house.
Yeah, there are a lot of street vets, and they have the luxury of being able to play with the depth they have and see if anybody is convertible, because otherwise JAD, you're going to have a hard time making the roster. He should be in there banging the table to take, say, give me some safety reps, because he should really see the handwriting on the wall with what's going on. Anyway, let's get back to Kone for a second. One thing that's been really good about his game is that he's only had two penalties in 367 college snaps. That's in 2024, which was a big improvement, by the way, on his career rate. And I didn't record what that was here, but one every 180 is good. If he could maintain that at the NFL level, which is a big ask, that would certainly be very good. There are a lot of very good corners with a ton of penalties right now in the NFL, and it does detract from their value. Unfortunately, one of them is Marlon Humphrey in terms of he had, I think, 15 penalties last year, some large number I want to get that right. I've said that a couple times on air, and that's the kind of thing you really want to get right. If you're saying,
oh, there's no question. As you're looking it up, you know, one of the other things, just talking about the defense and where Bilal could fit in, and like Kone, when you look at him, is this a guy that maybe you envision more than likely to be on the practice squad, or do you think he has to be a piece on this team to be a part of this team?
Well, if you're saying, is there a good chance he's going to be a waiver claim initially? I think it's possible. I don't think it's a certain thing. He doesn't have the kind of pedigree that says you're definitely, you know, he's definitely getting taken if they cut him. I think that either JAD probably is about a 60 to 75% chance to be taken by somebody else if the Ravens cut him. And I'd say that Ajabo is about an 85% chance to be taken by somebody else if the Ravens cut him. And in Ajabo's case, it might be just the right move because he needs to go to a less full depth chart. You know, a team that hasn't committed as much resources to the outside linebacker position. In the case of Kone, I think that the likelihood is that he would make it through to the practice squad. And if he did, then he'll be there for a while. But there's a phenomenon that happens in the NFL every year that the replacement level degrades or attrits as the season moves on with injuries. And in particular, at corner, where there are a lot of injuries, you get a much lower level of player. Defensive line is another place because in that case, it's because the size and shape pool is very limited. In the case of corner, it's a case of you have a lot of them and you need a lot of them because a ton of them get hurt. And then you're looking for Evan Oglesby or, you know, all these guys in December that you're bringing back from the grave to play.
Yeah, and it kind of makes sense too. Like, you know, one of the reasons I was asking the question about the practice squad, because if he plays well at all and you have a logjam and you make a decision, yeah. I don't know that the practice squad can be an option. And I'm not one, by the way, I'm not the fan that goes, oh man, I watched that guy catch two passes. They can't put him on the practice squad. Right. Somebody will take him. Who was it, Jaleel Scott years ago that everybody was screaming about and nobody even sniffed around him?
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I would agree. I think if Kone stays healthy, has a good camp, and more importantly, has a big preseason, I think he will be somebody that they'll be sniffing around. There's always a team that their depth is already blown by the end of camp, and they might need one or even two bodies at cornerback, and they're looking for the best guys, and they look at everybody else's top corner that's on their practice squad, and we'll start with that.
I'd be willing to say this, and maybe I'm being a little bit bullish on the Ravens, but I think Eric DeCosta is well respected around the league. And I think there are a lot of teams that would say, hey, if we're going to take something from somewhere, why not go there and grab one of their guys that they liked enough to put on their practice squad? The same way that their coaches get picked apart when they're rolling well.
Yeah, very, very legitimate point. And I always felt like that was true with the Ravens defensive line practice squad players, that the Giants and the Jets and the Chargers and other teams were always poaching from the Ravens DL talent on their roster. And some of it's because the Ravens executives have gotten around the league into a number of spots. And so you have these Ravens North and Ravens West and Ravens South kind of situations occurring. But the Ravens practice squad, definitely when they put a player there, they know he's at risk. All right. I will say the one negative I'm going to say about Kone, and I think there's a lot of positives here, is that the pick reminds me a little bit of Caillou Blue Kelly from a few years ago. Kelly was a guy who had really unimpressive final year coverage stats in college. And in Kelly's case, they were even worse than Kone's. But it's one of these things that it was a less competitive league. And in his case, he was playing in the Pac-12 at the time for Kelly, playing at Stanford, right? And, you know, I think it is possible that we don't see a NFL-ready cornerback this preseason. And that could just mean a straight cut. Almost certainly will mean a practice squad opportunity, but it could mean that he's not really competing with JAD for that final roster spot at all.
Yeah, and again, like going back to Stanford, I'd have to look at the years of who they were playing in the Pac-12, but there have been some absolute beasts in that wide receiver room that have come out of the Pac-12, especially at USC. We're seeing it in Washington now, and I know that's disbanded and it's all over the place, but going back to the Stanford years, I wonder who he was matched up with. I'd have to go back and look at it.
He had a similar situation, being on a really bad Stanford team and being a guy who would change sides of the field. So if we you know, when you have that combination, that's, and you're generally chasing a good receiver, it's not a recipe for success. But he came to camp, did not seem to be NFL ready, and the Ravens moved on and somebody else took him right away. And that might happen with Kone too, or he might make it through the practice squad. And it's Caillou Blue Kelly had more supporters than just the Ravens in terms of teams that drafted him and liked him.
Yeah.
All right. Let's move on and talk about what a good season is for Bilal Kone. I'll let you start. You're the guest. What components do you make up a good season for him? And you talk about how you think about it in terms of good season two, if you want to.
Yeah, it's funny because you were alluding to it before we started the pod, and I'm going, well, a good season, is it for the player or is it for the Ravens? Because a good season for the Ravens means that we don't see him out on the field, that the rest of those guys have been really good. I think a good season for him, and I think this is possibly ceiling, is that he becomes a rotational piece. And, you know, if he's able to get out there and be a part of this defense and get opportunities, if he showcases himself well in preseason and you get a chance to actually see him in games, because realistically, I feel like if you're going to see him, it more than likely means somebody else got hurt than he outplayed them. But if he did outplay somebody, that would be a great, you know, it'd be obviously a great thing. We were just talking about it. You got a cheap player and you found somebody late in the draft. It's hard for me to give him numbers because I just don't know how much he'd be out there, but I would say a good season for him is making the team, not the practice squad, and being a rotation piece.
Okay. All right. That's good. I have it at the 60th percentile. I said stays healthy in preseason, plays well enough to take no worse than the fifth cornerback spot on the 53. By the way, when I wrote this, the Ravens did not yet have Jaire Alexander. This became a lot more challenging here because TJ Tampa is there really as the fifth corner now on this team. If you're talking about outplaying somebody, outplaying Awuzie is a possibility. Awuzie could be, you know, this year's Rock Ya-Sin if it really were to not work out. And then the Ravens would be looking for answers, I think, because I don't think Alexander is going to make it through the year without injury. I think that'd be,
I mean, if you're going off of track record the past couple of years, that's been the case. I know his dad was screaming out to the media, like, he's healthy, he's ready to roll. You guys are going to see one of the best cornerbacks in the league in Baltimore.
He has no money on the table on that comment he's making, but that's it's good to hear. I think that for him to have a good year, he has to be a solid special teams performer. He has to have the speed, and an improvement to tackling would probably be good. The kickoff coverage unit is going to be very focal this year. He would have to play a role on that. You know, the 35-yard line punitive field position start on touchbacks is going to mean a lot more kicks are returned, which means more tackles have to be made, which means your coverage unit has to be sound. And a lot of those are going to occur between probably the 25 and 35-yard line. So there's value to be harvested there. It's just a case that your coverage unit can't be you probably can't hide a player or two there as teams might have been able to last year because the 30-yard line penalty was.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything from stress to sleepless nights with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not particularly significant.
Well, you know, you brought up too something I should have mentioned was special teams, because I didn't even talk about that. Like, because I think you can really make a case for yourself if you play well there. But yeah, I mean, I kind of agree with everything you said.
All right. Last comment about him was that he gets a limited trial at corner, and I'd say less than 100 snaps on defense in 2025. That number would actually be down with Alexander around. It's going to be very difficult for him to make this team. I think they will keep six corners, but I think the sixth guy will be a slot, and that's why I think Longer Beam will probably make it over Kone. So I might change my good season to say that he's the top of the practice squad corner who's ready for the Ravens when that first injury occurs to jump up and be the number five. But anyway, I think there's some things to like about this player, but that's a good season for me. What would a great season look like to you, Jeremy?
Well, I mean, if he got the opportunity because of an injury and we saw him play at a decent level. Now, I'm not talking you got to be a Pro Bowl or anything like that, but if he could come in and be one of those outside corners for you and showcase that he's able to do that consistently, I think that would be a great season. Or if we had something, you know, it's hard to bring up the Geno Stone year because he was always around the ball. Maybe you luck in and because you're that rookie cornerback, they attack you and you get some picks. You can showcase that way. But it's hard to say a great season. I think it would be being a rotational piece and making plays out there and proving that you can be an outside corner that can be trusted. I just think it's way early for that.
Okay, I think that's good. I think I've got a thing to add here that I think might work is that he makes the 53. It's not clear whether he should be the fifth or sixth corner. And it might even be that his play this preseason is a catalyst to move Tampa to safety or move another corner to safety. Maybe JAD, because he would have trouble making it otherwise. But anyway, he beats out JAD in a longer beam. He maybe outplays Tampa. He could also, by the way, if Tampa has a decent year at corner, then that's certainly a positive for the Ravens. He could also outplay Awuzie. Awuzie is a vet, has a lot of things going for him in terms of, you know, incumbency and the likelihood that he'll be the first guy off the bench to get snaps. or even just rotate from the start with Alexander because they want to try and keep them both healthy. But in the case of Kone, I think that if he were to force somebody else to safety, that would be a good indication that the Ravens really believe him. And then he's got to be good on special teams, getting solid activations by regular activations by midseason, which means that he's kind of taken over that Tez Walker role from last year where they trust him enough to be that last guy on special teams or maybe not the last guy on special teams. And then because of that, he gets a little bit of mop-up time play and what time. But regardless of how this season plays out for him in actual playing time at corner, he's a significant component of the 2026 roster decisions. And they've got a lot to make. They'll have Alexander, Awuzie, extension of Humphrey, a whole bunch of things to decide on at corner after this season.
You know, the other part of that too, Ken, is showcasing yourself enough and putting enough on film that even next year, if they decide to move on, that you could be one of those guys to slide in, I think could still be a good slash great season for him if he did enough for that to maybe then become a little bit more impactful in the following year.
Yeah. All right. Good stuff. Let's move over, talk a little bit about Mark Andrews. He'll be 30 on September 6th, the day before the Ravens start their season. He's very much in a crossroads season this year. Report has been made that the Ravens have made an offer to Isaiah Likely in the neighborhood of $13 million per season. I don't know if I completely believe it or not, but it wouldn't be unexpected that they try and make an offer to Likely. What we have not heard anything about a new offer made to Andrews. That is kind of an interesting thing because I don't think the Ravens can afford to keep both of them in 2026.
And you'd like to go with the younger guy if you're, yep. I mean, if we're being honest about it, the athleticism that Likely has. But I'm one of those guys when it comes to Mark Andrews that when he is on the team, I think he's the most important cog in the passing game. And I know a lot of people might disagree with me on that. His touchdown equity is just, it's the best in Ravens history, right? Like when you talk about what he's doing.
Yeah, he had 11 and 69 targets this last year, which is 15.9%. The only guy who was higher than him was Mark Ingram in 2019, and that was only 29 targets. So Andrews is number one in TD percentage. A lot of records were set for Ravens wide receivers and tight ends this last year in the big year Lamar had. And yet there's a disastrous game at Buffalo that overshadows just an outstanding season he had.
Ken, you're a huge fan. What were you feeling in those moments? Because, like, I'm a fan. I root for the team. I love Mark Andrews. I think he's a phenomenal player. I was gutted, not only with the fumble. It's like, okay, things happen. When he had a chance to redeem himself and give the team an opportunity and the ball couldn't have been placed. I don't know that it could have been placed anywhere better. I don't know he's had an easier catch with no one around him. And for that to happen, I just felt awful for him.
Yeah, it is. In terms of him not being around the podium, I completely understand that in terms of not wanting to do it. I remember a few years ago when Justin Tucker missed the extra point against the Saints and he almost demanded to go to the podium. It's not usual for somebody who misses a kick like that. Like Al Del Greco would not have been at the podium for the Tennessee Titans after that 2001 playoff win by the Ravens in Tennessee. It took a couple of days before he came out and he had something to say. And maybe in a certain sense, measuring it is a good thing. I think he was not at locker cleanout day either, which was a kind of a weird situation last year. But regardless, I mean, it's very unfortunate that this happened in the biggest game of the year for the Ravens, but it is a one strike league. You don't get three strikes and you're out. You get one strike and you're gone. Once the postseason begins. And a lot of times you get one strike even during the regular season in terms of trying to set yourself up for the best chance to win in the postseason. And it's just unfortunate that it happened, but it shouldn't overshadow the fact that Mark Andrews had was still among the best tight ends in the entire league and 141 passer rating throwing to him this season. The tight ends as a whole these last 2 years, 143.5. 30 touchdowns and one interception thrown to the tight end for the Baltimore Ravens last two seasons. Mark Andrews has been a very big part of that. It's an incredible record. It's one of the great two-year runs in NFL history for a tight end role.
And you're looking at a group here, and I know we're talking about tight ends, but when you start mixing in the wide receivers, there's a lot of mouths to feed And for him to come away with that many touchdowns, it's just kind of showing you, again, when I go back and say him being on the team, if he wasn't here, obviously somebody else steps into that role. And some people may look at Zay Flowers or Isaiah Likely and say they're more important. But when you – like, I'm going to look at Mark Andrews at the end of the year, and I'm going to see how many first downs he picked up and how many touchdowns he had. And to me, those are going to be the two most important things when I look at his season, because there's so many guys here that you can use on any given day. That's why, like, honestly, I was looking at this team as all these outlets this week during MLB All-Star Week are looking for all these lists, top 10 this, top 10 that. And this Ravens team has so much potential to be an epic team. I feel like they should be talking about a dynasty with the team they had 2 years ago and last year, but here we are. And with Mark Andrews coming back, I didn't think he was going to be on the team. So I'm kind of excited to see what this offense looks like, because I think it could be the best in the league, honestly. Well, maybe not better than Cincinnati, but they're going to have to throw the ball 80 times a game.
Yeah. It's very hard to look at Baltimore and Cincinnati and not come to the conclusion, in my opinion, that Baltimore has the better offense. Now, they don't pass the ball as often for a multitude of reasons. First of all, they don't trail in football games, which has been a big thing in the Lamar era. They like to run the ball, and they're very effective doing it, which is extremely unusual in today's NFL that you have a team that can do it as effectively as the Ravens do. But one of the things about the Monken offenses these last 2 years is most of the players have succeeded in a less is more environment. And with Andrews and the tight ends, okay, 2 years ago, 2022, the last year of Roman, Ravens played a ton of tight end snaps in total, the most, I think, in NFL history in a relative basis. It has certainly been decades since any team has played as heavy in terms of tight ends, fullbacks, plus OL6s per snap. But the point I want to make out of that is they had 195 targets as well in 2022 as a group. That dropped to 110, one of the two. I think it's 110 and then 128 are the two numbers the last 2 years. They barely had more targets last 2 years than they had in 2022 alone. And yet they've had a lot more production with the 30 touchdowns, one interception, and the very high passer rating that goes with that. And that's been the case of a lot of the specific players within Monken's offense. That's good if you're looking at the offensive quality and the points per drive. It's bad for an individual sometimes who gets upset that he's not getting the football as much and his own contractual future is put at risk over it.
Well, I mean, it's the perfect thing to talk about because, you know, I'll include tight ends in it, but mainly wide receivers are divas for a reason.
Yep.
You can do everything right and never see the ball. And you get into an offense like this, it's kind of interesting because there are so many mouths to feed that in any given week, it could be one guy that's just dominating the looks, or it could be spread out. A guy like Mark Andrews, who, again, some of these guys are coming into contract years, it's like, hey, I want to put up as many yards, receptions, touchdowns that I can, pick up as many first downs, keep moving the sticks and showcasing myself. But you may not get all those opportunities because you do have a Rashad Bateman. You do have a DeAndre Hopkins and a Zay Flowers. And to be fair, I mean, I don't know if we're looking at a pecking order with the tight ends, but Isaiah Likely, I think he has the chance, if given the opportunity, just to be the guy, to be one of the three best tight ends in football. I think he has that type of talent. And then Mark Andrews has already been that. So the fact that they're both back, if everybody can do that, what Chris Bosh did on the Miami Heat, saying, yeah, okay, I'm going to fill in and do everything I can. I want to win games. That's the most important thing to me. You can have a great offense. And I feel like the Ravens, with the receivers they have and the tight ends, I don't think we're going to have too many guys complaining, or at least you hope not, with this group. I think the last guy you had was, what, Hollywood Brown? It was
last year, Deontay Johnson. Oh,
I don't even count him, man. That guy sucks. I'm not going in the game. It's too cold. What a jackass.
Yeah. I just think the guy's ruined his NFL career. It is hilarious that anything will be used as leverage by the Harbaugh haters out there. And as soon as he leaves the team, oh, look, his teammates all love him. He thinks he'll come back. And they're slapping him on the back as well. Well, no. And then he plunks out of another organization.
Yeah.
I believe he's probably out of chances. It was an interesting move by the Ravens to repick him up because they were working the comp pick formula. And it didn't end up paying off for them. He didn't end up contributing to the comp pick formula in any way. But it was the kind of thing where there was a cost to it, and they were bringing him back, and it was almost despite the fact that everybody knew they hated him. I mean, basically, they were re-signing him, and I don't know if he's at the practice facility or not, but they probably just told him, you know what, don't even come here. We're picking you. It's strictly for the comp formula. And I actually don't know if he actually showed up to the castle or not after that second signing.
That's something else, man. Like, when he gave his reasoning, I went, did you think that helped you? Like, yeah. Did you think that made you look good?
who coached him on that? Who helped him, you know, come up with, why was that a good idea? What was the motivation? Yeah,
it's too cold. I don't want to pop a hamstring or a calf. It's like, come on.
It's you know what it reminds me of, and maybe the thought process and the you know, the disconnection with reality is similar. But Earl Thomas, remember when the Browns had that 88-yard run in Week 4, Chubb?
He pulled up from
he pulled up and he said, no, I don't want to pull a hamstring on the play, and he wouldn't have caught him. That's the truth of the matter. He just shouldn't have said that particular thing.
And make it seem like you're doing something, you know, like that's the one thing you don't want to hear somebody come out and say. Like, I like players being honest, but there are some things that are better kept to yourself instead of telling the world, you know?
Completely agree. We look at the evolution of Mark Andrews. I think is one of the interesting things over the years. He came into the league as a flex tight end primarily. But he became one of the best blocking tight ends in the NFL. And the last several seasons with Roman, that was really true. But he reverted this last year to a much higher percentage of inline snaps. I didn't realize this until I saw this, but the Ravens were trying to do some things. And one of them in particular was to protect Roger Rosengarten at right tackle. And so they wanted Andrews, and they had Kolar in there for a lot of it, but they also had Andrews in there for a fair amount. He had 39% of his snaps were in line, and that was up from 20% in 2023. So almost doubled his percentage of inline snaps between 23 and 24.
Yeah. And again, like, this is a guy that if you're watching growth and how much they got better, I remember before we got all these receivers, the meme that was going around with Lamar dropping back saying, well, I'm just going to chuck it up there. Andrews is out there somewhere. And they do, they have a really good rapport. So, I'm hoping that this is a special season for the team and that he gets to right some of the wrongs that went, you know, didn't go his way last year. But I still feel like when you're talking about his career and how much better he's gotten, you're right, as a blocker, he became a top three tight end in this league, like relatively quickly, you know, if you're thinking about how good he had been. And that's in an offense that's a run first offense, and there's no question about that.
Yeah. Yeah. The stars were aligned in some ways that really helped that. Lamar's mesh point work with Ingram in 2019, when he obviously had his first breakout year, set up Andrews a lot that season. He'd already had a really great connection with Andrews because they were both number twos in the 2018 preseason. And so, Hayden Hurst was the Ravens' number one tight end at that point, coming to the camp, and he was getting a lot of the time with Flacco, and Andrews and Jackson were sharing a lot of the reps. And I just, the fact that happened that way, I can't help but think that really had an impact on how quickly and how persistent Andrews' rise was.
There's no question. And again, like, you saying that now, I never even thought about it this entire time. Like, the fact that he got to work with him, like, there was a story going back to Philip Rivers when he was backing up Drew Brees when he was drafted. Yeah. And they had Vincent Jackson, who they drafted out of Northern Colorado, and Philip Rivers and Vincent Jackson developed this rapport. So once he became the starter, everybody's like, who's this receiver he keeps throwing to? And I feel like that's something that developed in camp by getting a ton of reps together.
One of the things that Andrews has been good at in recent years, and particularly in 24, and avoiding his penalties, he'd had a fair number of OPI flags in prior years. He was picking up about one per year, a little bit more actually. But it is a big deal to avoid those. They're post-snap flags, first of all, so they're declinable. And they have a big change in EPA when they occur. But he's done a very good job otherwise in terms of being a solid blocker. I won't get into it. I'll point people to the offensive line scoring methodology from last week for some of the things about about relativized blocking scores between PFF and my system, but there is a, in terms of penalties in particular, PFF is fairly light on players, and I'm much more of a slave driver in terms of how important those things are.
Ken, it feels like you're going by on base percentage in baseball, and they're just still looking at batting average. It's like it affects it. Like it's something that you have to take into consideration. And one other thing with Mark Andrews, and I'll throw it back at you and ask you this: like as you get older, you know he's starting to slow down, and I think typically when guys are slowing down, they have to find new ways to create space, and you could see more of those push-offs and offensive pass interferences with a guy like that. And he's been shown so much attention over the year. Maybe he does have better matchups, but Mark Andrews isn't a spring chicken anymore, and he's not – I don't think he's breaking any 80-yard out routes, taking it to the house. I mean, he could, but it does look like at times he's carrying that refrigerator on his back as he's getting older.
Yeah, he doesn't have to get a ton of separation. He uses his body very well, catches the ball on a contested basis reasonably well. I would always like him to get non-contested catches when he can. But the OPIs often accrue on wide receiver screens, and he's very well timed now in terms of not
– I got you. Block. Okay.
Before, yeah.
That makes sense.
What do I want to say about this? I had some notes here on 23 and 24. I have to figure out what I'm – Yeah. So for 23 and 24, for the tight ends in general, I just want to go through a lot of things. I already talked about the less is more. All of the things about the reduced targets for tight ends reduced the interceptions because they were throwing to – Jackson was throwing to more open receivers. It's just a function of Monken did a better job of managing the space than Roman did. Roman had lots of good qualities as an offensive coordinator, by the way. I don't like throwing him in the toilet the way that some Ravens fans have done. A lot of the scheme the Ravens still run is still really Roman scheme that's still around, and Monken has been adept enough at folding that into the cake as it's being made today. But
well, yeah, again, like I'm one of those guys, because I love the passing game so much, like Roman frustrated the hell out of me, but there's no denying what he created here. It's like, I think it's the best of all worlds. You brought him in, you learned the tricks of his trade. Now you implement that and then bring in somebody else to evolve the passing game. And I don't think there's any doubt that's happened over the past couple of years.
That's right. And I, you know, one thing that I frequently point out is how Lamar Jackson, how much he's improved every single running back he's played with. I don't think that would happen to the degree it has if Lamar had been with another offensive coordinator initially. I think it would be, the effect would be muted. It would still be there. Lamar Jackson's still an incredible threat. He's an extra player on the field that defense needs to account for. So you'd always have that. But I think a lot of the things he learned to do in terms of using the mesh point, pulling the ball late, doing some of the things with Ingram in particular initially, was very adept with the mesh point. Those things helped Lamar Jackson become the player he is today. And Roman deserves a portion of that credit. And there's going to be a group of people that will just bring a bile into their mouth to hear that. But that's really the case as I see it. Let's see. In terms of also the tight end group and what happened, Bateman and Flowers got separation that was able to create space for other players. This is, it created space for Odell Beckham for starters. He had a good year in terms of a per target basis with the Ravens. It just wasn't worth it in terms of the contract. And the tight ends as well, obviously, were tremendous beneficiaries. The scheme and Lamar that's come in with the Monken era, I think has benefited tremendously. The Henry Jackson mesh point though, is the most powerful weapon in football. And you as soon as you have those two guys crossing paths on a play where it might be handed off, a whole bunch of things get triggered, which are very positive for receivers, for Lamar, and for Henry in terms of things working out.
I think at the mesh point, two things happen. You're either going, oh, damn, he kept the ball. Oh, damn, he gave it to him. Like, figure out what you want to do. Because, again, as you're talking about it, we've mentioned this on our show so much that he puts that ball in his belly. You have to respect it. You have to. And a lot of times you see guys coming forward, and that's what opens up over the top. And you can do it, like a lot of people talking about using the run game to set up the pass game. You can, in essence, pitch backwards. You know, you can use the passing game to set up the run game as well. But I'm old hat. I like the way that the Ravens do it, and I think they do a phenomenal job.
All right. Well, let's talk about Mark Andrews and what makes a good season here. What, from your perspective, you know, you have a 30-year-old tight end here, 31. By the way, Marlon Humphrey had 11 penalties and not 15 this last year. I want to apologize to Marlon Humphrey and his entire family for having that wrong, but
he'll pick up four more this year, and you know, it won't matter. No, no, but a good season. So a good season for Mark Andrews, I feel like, is putting up some numbers, going out, getting his, I'll say, 60 receptions, 50 to 60, and then getting his touchdowns and being, you know, an integral part in this offense. If you want to put a number on it, I will, but I don't think he has to be a 1,000-yard guy. I'm more looking at his touchdowns. I still think he needs to be that guy in the red zone for it to be a good year. Are you muted? You're muted. They're gonna hear me talking.
That's always on everybody's bingo card. So congratulations. it's turned into a free space.
It's a free square. Again.
Yeah. healthy for 15 plus games. Quality of targets, I think, is going to probably decrease slightly. Monken's probably still in search of that happy medium. Got a chance. I mean, okay, if I had to handicap it, I'd say there's about a 5% chance that the Ravens tight ends can duplicate what they've done over the last two seasons. It's just, it has to be very low. Lamar has to have a great year. Basically, all the other elements of the offense have to be fitting together. But I think that there'll be kind of an inevitable reduction in per target efficiency, which still could end up with him being quite good. 8.5 yards per target would be a standard I would have. I don't have any expectation at all in terms of yards, because I think the targets could be very variable based on how Monken decides to run this offense. I think he keeps the connection with Lamar on extended plays. That's part of a good season. Still remains a fine run and pass blocker. I think you've got a stable element there in his play that has real value. And he's in the discussion as one of the top tight ends in the AFC, particularly among the analysts who put a value on balanced play. There's always going to be a bunch of guys who say it's all about the passes for a tight end. But the balanced play people will appreciate Andrews to a greater degree than some of the others.
Yeah, and look, all the points you made, very fair. I think sometimes when you're looking at, we bring it up, all the mouths to feed on offense, and it's not going to be divvied out. You get 40, you get 40, you get 40. It's not going to happen that way. But I do think, I'm wondering too, like with DeAndre Hopkins joining the team, because the way I look at D-Hop and the way I look at Mark Andrews, it's, are you getting me first downs? Are you great in the red zone? And I think, could one vulture the other? I think it's a possibility, but I can't wait to watch this group perform this year. I just think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, it will be. And there's so many ways they could be deployed. Let's go to a great season here. What do you think about that? What would be the thing that...
Yeah, I don't want to be generic, Ken, because like it's something where you could look at the numbers. He could have a great season statistically, get paid in the offseason on a shorter-term contract from somebody. For me, for him to have a great season, it's not about what he puts up in the regular season. It's how does the season finish? Is he a big part of the postseason? Does he exercise the demons? And no, if he catches every pass against the Bills, that's still not going to put him in that spot. He knows he wants to get it done in the postseason. And just to put the cherry on top for a great one, I hope he makes a big play, AFC Championship, Super Bowl. Because, look, he's been a great player for this team. And I did not want to see it end the way it ended last year, because in doing radio, he got killed for about 2 months straight. Right. For not talking after the game, for the drop, for the fumble. And then people start looking up his postseason numbers. I just want to see him exercise those demons.
Yeah, I would agree. I wouldn't have a lot to add to that. I do expect still a drop off from his productivity last year, just because it's been the best in Ravens history. But I think one of the big things, I want to see him at 9.0 yards per target, passer rating of 120 throwing to him. Those kind of numbers would be good. And they'd both be a drop. But here's the big one. If the Ravens find a way to keep two of the three tight ends for 2026, I think that'd be good. I'm confident they'll keep Ricard, because they've got a system to keep him where it makes it harder for another team to sign him away with a vet contract bonus. But I hope they're able to keep two of three of Kohler, Likely, and Andrews. And I'm afraid that means one of two of Andrews and Likely. And I'm not even saying in a great season it has to be Andrews, but he has to play well enough that he's in the discussion to be one of the guys they keep.
Yeah, I mean, this team, I think tight ends and defensive line pieces, this team has done a phenomenal job in the mid rounds of finding just absolute gems. And I would put Mark Andrews in that grouping as well.
All right. Well, Jeremy, always a pleasure doing this kind of thing with you. I talking football with you in general. Love my time with the Morning Crew, by the way. Appreciate the way you guys have me on every week and the nice good time slot you've given me and everything. But
absolutely, man. I tried to say something inappropriate to see if I can get Ken laughing, because there's nothing quite like when I get him with something that I can't say on the air and it's off the air, and then you get going, man. So, but no, I appreciate you having me. Anytime, I'll be here. Yeah.
You get a cupcake every time you do that. I know you know what I'm talking about with that.
Yeah.
Jeremy, appreciate you coming on. Other folks out there, thanks for listening as always. Wonderful audience that is just extremely loyal, and I do appreciate that. If you want to do something nice for the show, hit us up with a 5-star, 50-word review on your favorite podcast platform. That drives a little traffic here, and we're always looking for word of mouth dispersal as well. Look forward to camp reports coming up. They'll be starting next week on the 23rd when camp starts. Actually, it's this week by the time you hear this. I'll be having those daily. Jeremy, thanks again for coming on.
Anytime, Ken. Thanks for having me.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365, because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only. Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.